From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, a special series from To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, what does evolution want?
Evolution by natural selection, a process which has no purpose at all, nevertheless generates systematically things that do have purposes. We make our own purposes. We don't inherit our purposes from our ancestors or from God.
Many intellectuals, many scientists, many biologists are convinced that evolution has destroyed the notion of purpose. So one of the things that I try to do in my theology is to point out that that's not necessarily true at all.
So can you reconcile the apparently meaningless, random process of evolution with some underlying purpose, perhaps even belief in God? Today we'll examine that question and look back at Charles Darwin's own views on moral progress. Also, the startling discovery that human evolution is actually speeding up.
Today, what it takes to live is different than what it took for hunter-gatherers in the Pleistocene, and so it might be better for you to sort of shift.
If there is one strand of evolutionary theory that sticks in the craw of nearly every religious believer, it's the idea that human beings are just an evolutionary accident. But what if it's no accident we turned out the way we did? What if the evolution of humans, or some brainy creature like us, was inevitable once life first appeared on Earth? That's the radical idea of the highly regarded paleontologist and evolutionary biologist Simon Conway Morris. Steve Paulson went to visit Conway Morris in his office at Cambridge University in England and came back with this report.
What I do is I work on a very old-fashioned system. I have to use computers, but in fact I use just simple file cards. So, and I have 1,000 of these cards here. If I want to discover what's going on with regard to poison frogs, here we go. This is good. There's a whole set of papers.
Simon Conway Morris looks happiest when he's rummaging through the marvelous intricacies of his favorite plants and animals, the canines of saber-toothed cats, the eye of an octopus, the way flowers make pollen.
And then we go down to such examples as the bees and their intelligence. That's quite interesting.
We're sitting in a cramped office in the Earth Sciences building in downtown Cambridge. Conway Morris has piles of books and papers scattered all over his room and file drawers stacked right on top of his desk, filled with thousands of case studies. He spent years marshaling evidence for what's called evolutionary convergence, when entirely separate evolutionary histories lead to the same kind of thing. For instance, the sharp teeth and slashing claws of different cats, or the capacity to grow crops in species as diverse as humans and ants.
But right at the back of the cephalopods, we have a little section called ink. What on earth is all that about? Well, many people are familiar that animals like squid and so forth can blow clouds of ink. But the really fascinating thing is it turns out that ink is much more than simply a cloud of opaque material to baffle people. There are chemicals in the ink which confuse the would-be predator. And in the sea hare, what they actually do is they persuade the spiny lobster, which wants to eat the sea hare, it persuades the light spiny lobster it is eating a meal. It's ridiculous.
Simon Conway Morris is a bit like those great 19th century naturalists who possessed an encyclopedic knowledge of Earth's creatures. Conway Morris first came into public view in Stephen Jay Gould's 1989 book Wonderful Life. He was one of Gould's heroes, the young paleontologist who sifted through the Burgess Shale fossils to help uncover the remarkable story of the Cambrian explosion. Gould went on to argue that evolution is full of strange twists and turns, and he said if you reran the tape of evolution, an entirely different set of creatures would emerge, certainly not human beings again. But later, when Conway Morris wrote his own book about the Burgess Shale, he came to the opposite conclusion and argued that evolution is highly constrained. It can only move in certain directions. That's why he's so set on finding every possible example of evolutionary convergence, to show that plants and animals with completely different histories can end up with nearly the same characteristics.
Now, actually, one of the most interesting examples of an evolutionary convergence, that is to say, different starting points, as I would regard it, ending up with the same functional solution, is the camarae, which has evolved in us, that's vertebrates, which relative to the fish and so forth, and the jellyfish, yes. They too possess these eyes, which are, for all intents and purposes, constructed in exactly the same way as our eyes are. They're much, much smaller, of course, and of course it begs all sorts of interesting questions, because the jellyfish doesn't have a brain, for example, has a nervous system. What I find very interesting is, in the Camarae, it's evolved in ourselves, it's evolved in the jellyfish, it's also evolved in such animals as the squid and the octopus, but it's evolved about another four or five times. And the really interesting thing about the Camarae is the animals it's evolved in typically tend to move fast, they tend to be predators, they tend often to be intelligent.
This question of intelligence is where Conway Morris's argument gets especially interesting. He claims it's inevitable that some simple organisms will evolve, eventually, many eons later, into intelligent creatures.
I'm interested in the emergence of biological properties. And so, for instance, if we have a cognitive landscape which we know is shared by other animals, then that seems to be a property of Homo sapiens, but it's not unique to Homo sapiens. And so you've really got to ask, how likely is it that certain cognitive landscapes will evolve? Well, I think it's actually rather likely.
I just want to follow up on this. Are you saying that there's something within the evolutionary process that leads inevitably to a highly intelligent species like Homo sapiens?
Well, I don't have any quarrel with the evolution of a highly intelligent species. I think that is an evolutionary inevitability, and I think any Darwinian biologist would have no quarrel with that, because we see so many examples of convergence, even in the octopus. The more we learn about the octopus in particular, things like their capacity for gaze, as we say, when interesting things happen, they definitely spend more time looking at them, their ability to play, their ability in certain cases to move from one tank to the other to get food they can see next door, all those sorts of things. And again, I'm not trying to say any more that the crow, the parrot, the dolphin, the chimpanzee, or the octopus are us. That's not my intention. What I'm saying is that they have cognitive capacities which are very much on the road to what is necessary to become fully human.
This is the most controversial part of Simon Conway Morris's argument, where he runs into trouble with the vast majority of evolutionary biologists. He sees the intelligence and even tool-making abilities of various animals, for instance, the way New Caledonian crows create rudimentary tools, as evidence that a highly intelligent species will inevitably emerge.
Don't worry about whether you're talking about a mammal or a bird. Think about the biological property, technology. Is that inevitability? Yes, the details of the evolutionary story would not be the same, but the end product, a sentient species with an advanced civilization, in my view, is an inevitability.
So, what do other experts on evolution think about this biological drive toward a highly intelligent species? I checked in with some prominent biologists. Ken Miller is a cell biologist at Brown University. Like Conway Morris, he thinks the evolutionary process will eventually produce a highly intelligent species.
And I think it's fair to say that given time and circumstance and resources, living organisms are not only going to find the earthworm-style niche, and they're not only going to find the pine tree-style niche, they're going to find the high intelligence niche as well. And I think that's why Conway Morris makes the argument that if not the evolution of humans in the sense of intelligent primates, but the evolution of an intelligent, reflective, self-aware being very much like us was, in his view, inevitable.
I don't think any such trend exists. Species evolve and they're just keeping up with a changing Earth.
That's Sean Carroll, a leading evolutionary biologist at the University of Wisconsin. He's written several books on evolution and writes a science column for the New York Times.
Animals exploit what's available. You know, dinosaurs were pretty spectacular. All we've got left from them are birds, right?
There is another school of thought here that if you play out the evolutionary process long enough, if you have a nice planet like Earth with good environmental conditions, you will inevitably get a highly intelligent species such as human beings.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of that idea. You know, again, this is where we've stepped into the picture and think that the world was evolved for us. It's pretty clear that a few other rolls of the dice, it might not have come out this way. A lot of our ancestors went extinct. Why we made it, is a whole complex interplay of factors. And clearly our intelligence and our cultural evolution has played a huge part in our, at least, momentary success. But was that inevitable? My personal view is no, that was not inevitable. That I'm too humbled by the accidents of nature and the flux that's there in the process, particularly in the environment, the geological and climatic environment of the Earth is incredibly dynamic. You know, the continents are moving, the oceans, sea levels are rising and falling, you have glaciations, you have ice ages. When we look at past extinctions of species, we understand that usually there's a pretty clear climatic reason for either a gradual or more rapid die out. I guess I would just say, hey, we could be a blip.
The noted philosopher of science Daniel Dennett agrees with Sean Carroll. Dennett's the author of Darwin's Dangerous Idea, Evolution and the Meanings of Life. He doesn't think much of Conway Morris's theory.
I think he's just wrong to say that this is inevitable. That's romantic and mistaken. Is the evolution of marsupials inevitable? I don't think that the inevitability of humanoid intelligence is any more inevitable than the inevitability of marsupials.
When you think about it, there are profound religious implications to this whole question of human inevitability. Many people of faith simply don't want to consider the possibility that we're an evolutionary fluke, just a lucky winner in the genetic sweepstakes. And it's worth pointing out that Conway Morris is a committed Christian, while Dennett is a highly visible atheist. So maybe it's no accident that Dennett scoffs at the idea that we humans had a date with destiny.
The idea that this whole great universe was in some sense designed or intended for us to show up strikes me as just bizarrely self-involved, one of the most stunningly narcissistic visions that I've ever encountered. Seems unlikely, don't you think?
But not all atheists agree with Daniel Dennett. Take the world's most famous atheist, the renowned British biologist Richard Dawkins. He thinks the evolutionary process does push toward intelligent life.
As a matter of fact, Simon Conway Morris and I are remarkably close. I mean, he's one of very few biologists who agrees with me, and I'm one of very few biologists who agrees with him on that very question. It's just that he thinks it implies some kind of theistic push, and I don't.
Ken Miller, the cell biologist at Brown University, is, like Simon Conway Morris, openly religious. Miller's a Catholic. In fact, he wrote a book called Finding Darwin's God, which recounts his own search for common ground between evolution and religious faith. But he says you don't have to make a religious argument for the evolutionary drive toward intelligence. He points to the late cosmologist Carl Sagan, one of the prime movers of the SETI project and an outspoken atheist.
I just want to read you something. It's very brief, that Sagan wrote. He said, when we're talking about extraterrestrial intelligence, we're not talking about humans or humanoids. We are talking about the functional equivalent of humans. Say, any creatures able to build and operate radio telescopes. These creatures may live on the land or in the sea or air. They may have unimaginable chemistries, shapes, sizes, colors, appendages, and opinions. We are not requiring that they follow the particular route that led to the evolution of humans. There may be many different evolutionary pathways, each unlikely, but the sum of the number of pathways to intelligence may nonetheless be quite substantial. In other words, Sagan's arguing that you're going to get to that niche of intelligence one way or another.
Back at Cambridge University, Simon Conway Morris mulls over the question of how he reconciles his own Christian faith with his decades of work as an evolutionary biologist. He says purpose is a philosophical and religious idea, not a scientific one, so he never claims that evolution has some ultimate purpose, but it's clear that his religious beliefs have shaped his underlying view of reality.
If one starts with the assumption that the universe is very cannily constructed, but also is capable of indefinite investigation, is not simply a closed book whereby some Darwinians, I think, would say, well, that's it, we sorted everything out. And I'd say, what? Why would we want to think that?
If you're a Christian, if you were serious about wanting to reconcile science and religion, and you study evolution, do you have to assume that it was necessary for humans to evolve? Because it would seem to me that every Christian pretty much assumes that there have to be human beings, otherwise there wouldn't be religion, there would be no purpose to it. So could you be a good Christian and think, oh, well, you know, maybe human beings did not have to evolve?
First of all, the universe on a theistic viewpoint and a Christian viewpoint is utterly contingent. It needn't exist at all, but more particularly, it could be anything which God so chose. Science is an open-ended venture. We don't know where it's going to end. People who think that religion is simply a set of answers to keep you comfortable are, I am afraid to say, sadly mistaken. It is an open-ended adventure. We don't know really what the nature of the universe is. We don't know why we have our moral and ethical and intellectual and poetic capacities. I know they come from an evolutionary basis. I have no quarrel with that. But so far as I'm concerned, I think we're going on to completely new territory. And my view would be that, in fact, the religious instincts, the religious teachings, actually tell us something real about the world. They're not simply fairy stories.
That's paleontologist Simon Conway Morris speaking with Steve Paulson in his office in the Earth Sciences building at Cambridge University in England. Coming up, Charles Darwin's life set to poetry. For To the Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, What Does Evolution Want? Is part of our special series, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, brought to you by Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.
Our series, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, is supported by grants from the John Templeton Foundation, supporting science, investing in the big questions, by Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and by the Neuer Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.